Hey everybody, what's up? This is Markus Moslechner and welcome to episode 1 of the Spacewatch Global Podcast. What's up everybody? You've been requesting it, now we bring you Spacewatch Global, a fortnightly podcast about all things space, the space industry, the universe, and of course everything else. So what makes us different? We bring you well-curated and in-depth expert knowledge from long-term space industry insiders from all over the place, including China, the United Arab Emirates, and Europe. Now, please do welcome my lovely co-host, Anna Haslett. Anna represents Spacewatch Global in the Middle East and Asia regions. Welcome, Anna.
Hi, Markus.
So I hear you got stuck in Dubai.
I am. No, I mean, it's not a bad place to be stuck, but it's a bit frustrating. I think like the rest of the world, not able to hop on a plane and go elsewhere.
Else with us on the show today is Torsten Kreening, co-publisher of Spacewatch.global.
Hello, Markus. How are you doing?
Good, Torsten. Where are you stuck these days?
I'm based and stuck in Berlin and are staying home.
My name is Markus Moslechner. I'm based in beautiful Vienna, Austria. I'm a filmmaker and science communicator at Terra Mata Factual Studios. So, without further ado, a little housekeeping to get us going. We have some news from the inside. We just started a series of weekly webinars bringing our successful space cafes into the streaming world. And our first Space Cafe web talk was 33 minutes with Professor Moriba Jha. Next up, Space Cafe web talk will feature Rafael Rutgen about how space entrepreneurs can raise money for their space projects and what trends he is observing in the financial markets. Else, in addition to our fortnightly newsletter, we are now offering a daily version for those who want to stay informed beyond our well-curated editions. As always, for more information, please go to spacewatch.global. So, our headlines for today. Corona and the space industry, no way around that. How space applications helped fight Corona in China. Satellite 2020 and mega constellations. And our favorite gems from this week in space. Anna, how has the virus affected the space industry?
Yeah, I mean, it's an extremely dynamic, somewhat fragile situation that we're facing, not just within the space sector, but, you know, industries worldwide. What we obviously, I think we're all in common understanding is that this virus affects everyone. So what we're starting to see is movement around a coordinated response into how space technologies and applications can be applied in the context of COVID-19. And that's really looking at the UK Space Agency and the UK Space Trade Association, who have come out publicly to say that they're working towards this in a coordinated effort. So for more information there, please head over to our website. We've updated that as of today, 1st of April. We also see the likes of some industry heavyweights like Virgin Orbit shifting their manufacturing capabilities into designing and building out ventilators with the help of a couple of universities based in the US. Whilst we obviously see the world over shares plummeting, we still see activity in the space sector moving. And this is really because of the need for space applications, and particularly satellite and Earth observation imagery. So there's no wonder that Rocket Lab is still aiming to send up two NRO satellites, as well as a couple of CubeSats this month. But then we also see the likes of Maxar and Planet that are observing stress in their supplier base. So as much as they're connected to the demand for Earth observation, we just need to see how long it's going to be until these guys get affected. What's interesting is that the lifting of the lockdown in parts of China has actually enabled a Wuhan-based Chinese commercial launch service provider to launch satellites this month. Now, I'll wait for my colleague or UA to give a bit more background onto that, but that was sort of an interesting thing that came out of space news in relation to COVID-19.
Thank you, Anna, for that perfect segue. Let me now introduce and welcome Yue Yang on the show. Yue, you are an individual space policy researcher pursuing research in space security policy, China-US-Russia relations, nuclear arms control and disarmament, emerging technologies, and international security. You're based in China, and you're the author of a widely read article on how space applications help fight corona in China.
Thanks, Marcus. Thanks for inviting me to give me this wonderful chance to be the guest here. So in the past 2 months, China was in a fierce battle against coronavirus epidemic with a total number of around 80,000 ordinary people infected. And the epicenter of the coronavirus, Wuhan, was under a lockdown measure. Chinese medical staffs, policemen, government staffs, or even ordinary people sacrificed a lot to save the country. So we will always remember those heroes. But right now, the situation of COVID-19, China is finally getting controlled. Many people back to normal life. Has going to gradually reopen. Companies get back to work. Especially many medical factories are voluntarily expanding their production lines to see if they can produce more testing kits, ventilators, masks to support other countries' medical supplies. Because before we received so many international medical supplies, supports, and courage from all around the world, I think Chinese people are so grateful for what foreign countries did for us, and we'll never forget those precious international friendship. In terms of the space applications in the virus crisis in China, Chinese space industry, actually, they have done a lot in the past 2 months to help fight against the coronavirus by providing multiple space services, such as geographic information system-driven spatial health map, telemedicine vehicle, GNSS support drones for large-scale disinfection, etc. In the meantime, space applications have provided substantial contributions to nationwide satellite television remote education, cargo transportation control for those perishable goods between provinces, and a massive mobilization of health workers from across the country, among other things.
Yue, in your opinion, in how far does all this affect the Chinese space engagement?
So there are three types of space-based technologies that could exert critical functions to contribute to public health emergencies, namely satellite positioning and navigation technology, remote sensing and Earth observation technology, as well as satellite communication technologies. Each of those technologies can derive different useful applications. For example, for the use of this satellite navigation system, the Wuhan government has promoted a Beidou navigation-based mobile app on WeChat, which is the messenger app which has so many Chinese people used here, known as Mini Neighborhood. So if the people suspect that they have symptoms of the coronavirus, they can file out a health profile from this form in this app. And after receiving the report, the application's administrator will immediately locate the patient's exact address to the hospital and send them to hospital, then notify their neighbors to stay away from the infectious regions. So this may be not only applicable to China, this app developers can, in other countries, maybe create a similar app on WhatsApp, Facebook, VK, with the use of their own navigation satellites, such as GPS, Galileo, or Russia's GLONASS navigation system, to provide different platforms for patients to seek help in a more convenient way. Other applications in China also including the use of disinfection drones, which can automatically detect the area of bacteria and spray the disinfectant fluid among communities. Therefore, it also can reduce the risk for workers who have to face the biosafety hazards or exposure to the high level disinfectant chemicals.
Yue, Anna shared at least to me, dystopian photograph from a lone drone hovering over an abandoned Emirati sidewalk void of people on its lonely cleansing mission with disinfectant. Does it look similar to where you look out of the window?
Exactly. I just saw the picture sent by Anna in UAE. That is how it works in China. It's the same. Like those drones are floating on air and spraying those disinfectant among communities. It's especially when people are under lockdown measures, they are not encouraged to go outside. Therefore, the streets are actually empty. It's a great time for those drones to do their jobs.
Mm-hmm. In fact, so in the UAE, just this last weekend, we were all told, you know, we were in lockdown for this exact measure for disinfection across the entire Emirates. And we started seeing like footage of these drones like running up and down the street or flying up and down the street being posted all over social media. But you see, I think that everything that you've mentioned UA is extremely, it gives us a real good insight as to how space technologies and applications fare in China. But if we were to sort of like plug and play this kind of model in parts of Europe, maybe Torsten, you could jump in here. I feel that maybe data privacy, data laws may prohibit some of the uses, some of the applications at least. The other thing is the adoption of technology and the usage of mobile phones in China. I mean, WeChat alone has over 1 billion active users every single month. That is a huge number of people, and that's just a fragment of the Chinese population. So what do you think, Torsten, about some of these applications and bringing them to Europe?
And from my point of view, it's evident that they have a good side and they have a benefit for us as a society. But you're completely right. At the moment, it's a huge debate about the GDPR, the data protection mechanisms which are put in place and got enforced 2 years back. So, and we try to maintain them. And the crisis showing us at the moment that it's hard to keep when life count. So and the government has to take decisions here, very hard decisions, especially during the crisis. I mean, for us, it was never foreseeable or even imaginable that we are locked down in our houses, that we are not able to move as free citizens. That's part of our constitutions. Most of the European constitutions have it in. But now we are. So, but it can only be for a period of time. And I think we have at the moment the discussion about using similar technologies, mobile phone technologies, on a voluntary base for people for detecting that. Will that help us? I don't think so. Make it mandatory or just leave it out. Otherwise, it's a toy.
Yue, how does all this play out for you, especially as a Chinese citizen? I could imagine that you're not expecting things to go away after the crisis, especially as your government has instated nationwide surveillance as one of its core projects.
There are so many Chinese netizens are actually worried about the issues happening in European countries recently. There's a huge debate on, is it possible like for Western people to give part of their rights to the government in this crisis. Because we have a complex culture between individualism and collectivism in Western and Eastern world. Is it okay to make a kind of balance between individual rights and obligations to some extent? This is what we discussed recently. Does it really matter? Like, does the right for living matters more where the freedom really matters. It's a good question right now.
And I think it's a critical point what you just said, because really after this, we're going to face a new normal. Maybe that will be more extreme for the so-called free world or, you know, more democratic societies. But we're definitely going to be seeing it in the next few months, how that's going to shape up. And maybe we'll all be a bit more kind of collective in our views, going back to your point about individualism versus collectivism. But I really think the only way to get through this, wherever you are, is through community effort.
Yeah, and there's one more question. Maybe in the future, we're going to face in the fourth industrial revolution, which definitely will be an information revolution. Like at that time, maybe the AI, artificial intelligence technologies will collect more data. Big data really means a lot at that time. During that time, will European countries still insist on their privacy rather than to meet the demand of the revolution? That's maybe another question.
So apart from security concerns, is there anything on the positive side the world, the space industry, could take away from the current situation?
So in all of the ups and downs that we're seeing within the space sector in recent days and weeks, you know, we've seen some really, really positive outcomes like Virgin Orbit, you know, changing or adjusting their assembly manufacturing capabilities into producing ventilators as a really good example of stepping up and adapting and contributing to society when needed most. We are seeing in the UAE, one of the biggest ever projects from the UAE space sector is the Emirati Mars mission. Or the Emirates Mars mission, I should say. And so there's a big question mark as to whether this is still going ahead, given the, you know, the lockdown and given stay-at-home orders. But the last that we checked with MBRSC, as well as the national news, is that it is going ahead. So the UAE Hope Mars mission is still scheduled for July launch in Japan, despite the pandemic. Yeah, and we actually saw, so the probe itself had completed, and we saw the last few bits being assembled by some of the leadership in the UAE. So they were involved in the last few moments of putting on various messaging onto the side of the probe. So it's a really big thing for this region, but not just for the UAE or this region, but for the space sector in general. Maybe Torsten, you could share, you know, why this is such an important mission to understanding Mars better. But it also demonstrates the engineering capabilities of the UAE in collaboration with engineers and scientists from other institutes. But it really just highlights that, you know, the UAE is serious about space. It's arguably fairly new to the sector, but it's issued and announced its own space law. December of last year, which was enacted soon after. And yeah, I mean, it's so-called business as usual when it comes to the Mars mission. And I think that that's what we'll be seeing hopefully in July without any disruption.
And the cool thing to me is that the world has a new Mars-faring nation, which in itself produces more competition. And that's a good thing, right?
No, I think the unique point for the Mars mission hope or from the UAE is that it's the first mission to an extraterrestrial planet from an Arab country. And it's the first mission ever, as far as I understand and know, is that takes care about the atmosphere of the Mars and does really a lot of environmental testing are in the Mars atmosphere. That's what it's designed for. So it's not a many describe it as a prestige project and so on, but it's far away from it. It is really a scientific project with in-depth science and research embedded. And I think if even this attempt is successful, then UAE and all the scientists, or the Emirati scientists, can be very proud of these results.
The Emirati becoming a major player in space, what does this mean in an international context?
I think, as Anna just mentioned, they are a respected partner on the international parquet. And all the missions they do, all the activities they do, are according to the guidelines of UNOSA or the other UN bodies, COPIUS, and so on. And they are for peaceful purposes. They support the SDGs on Earth and in space with all what they do. So it is everything they do in a global political international context.
And I think another thing to mention about this mission in particular is that they intend to share the data. So it's not just for the UAE, it's not just for Arab nations, it's for the world, for, you know, people that can understand how to translate this data. And, you know, living here, I've been based in the UAE for 5 years now, really we've seen a total shift towards the space sector and the attention and spotlight that the leadership here is giving the space sector in probably the past 2 years. So there's also a big drive towards other, you know, fourth industrial type revolutions, so buzzwords like machine learning, AI, you know, big data, etc. But when it comes to space, there's a real messaging here that it's actually for future generations. So understanding and putting things like the Mars mission, like the UAE astronaut program, like, you know, Emirati designed and built satellites, is becoming not self-sufficient, but it's becoming sufficient enough that it can rely on its own resources and talent within the UAE while still having a collaborative international approach, because let's face it, space can't be just one nation. It's a very integrated, collaborative effort. So yeah, it's a real deal here. It's not just window dressing. It's quite amazing how they pulled this together and the various sort of media attention that we're seeing around it.
May I add some? 2020 is said to be the biggest year for Mars exploration mission, because not only UAE is launching its Hope, there are also several countries are doing the same. For example, US NASA is having a rover called Perseverance. China Space Agency has its Huaxing number one, while European Space Agency and Russia's Roscosmos is also planning to sending its ExoMars, but it has been withdrawn and delayed to 2022. So there's a question, like maybe thinking like why it's so important for these countries to do this year, because 2020 is a very rare opportunity for the launch window, which will open between July 17 to August 5th, when Earth and Mars are in the proper position in the solar system to enable a direct interplanetary journey. That is why these countries wanted to seize the chance for this rare biannual time to do so. What I want to add more is the missions for the three countries' Mars mission is slightly different. For the US one, the Perseverance rover, the main goal for it is to assess the habitability of its surrounding Martian environment and search for maybe they have ancient microbial life there. For the UAE's one, I think Anna has already mentioned they want to collect the data for the climate changes and how the weather in Mars looks like to see how it applies to the Earth's environment. Well, the Chinese one is wanted to study the geographical and morphological features as well as the soil and water distribution of Mars. So no matter which country rover successfully finally to complete its mission on Mars, we should give them a huge round of applause, because it really means a lot and means a great significance to all human beings.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Wow. It's fascinating, because in public media on the Mars mission, UAE Mars mission, they don't mention anything about that alignment. You know, like it's not even that technical. to understand. But why don't they say in all the different publications talking about this moment where they have to make it happen, COVID or not COVID, like this thing to go in July? But it's just like, oh, maybe we can delay it to September. Well, you'll miss the boat.
I think the point to make here is really, and why everybody is focusing on this date is the star constellation, or the constellation of the planets, which only happens, I think, every 11 years or so in a good way. Otherwise, you are chasing Mars, and because it's on the wrong track, yeah. And I mean, Moon is easy. You have every month your launch window to land on the Moon wherever you want, yeah. But the Moon distance varies on 50,000 kilometers or so. So that's something you top up your tank and then fine. Yeah. So it's not a problem. But with Mars, it's a real thing. Yeah.
Next up, I'd like to draw our attention to mega constellations. Especially since last year, massive swarms of satellites in space are a big thing. And Elon Musk's Starlink is definitely one of them, but not the only one anymore. Is this the year of space swarms?
Of course. Elon was there. He gave the keynote. He was the reason that many people came up to Washington, D.C. I mean, he had a fully booked room and talked about the material they use for Starship and so on. So he didn't spoke too much about his mega constellation, which is still under deployment. I think he launched the sixth batch of Starlink already. But I think there are other mega constellations as well we have to highlight here. And what I would like to share with you is in early January, I had the chance to speak with Ronald van den Breggen. He was the chief commercial officer of LeoSat, which was grounded by the end of last year. They had a perfect, using his words, a perfect business case for data services in space. And at the end, they were grounded with about 2 billion euros in MOUs in their hand, because the banks or their main shareholders pulled out. So, and to top that, last week we had to report that OneWeb, one of the most promising mega constellation, are next to Starlink, which has a couple of dozens of satellites also in space, and just recently launched another batch of their satellites. OneWeb filed for bankruptcy. So all that comes together right now, and that's very scary for the entire industry.
Yue, can you give us the Chinese perspective on all of this? Are mega constellations a thing in China?
True. It is true that mega constellation satellites, which consist of thousands of spacecrafts, are becoming a popular solution recently for global telecommunication coverage, which also even can lay the foundation for the future 6G devices. But we cannot deny that there's so many threats and risks for generating a large number of space debris. It will present a particular safety hazard to satellites that can threaten countless of other spacecraft in orbit. And more importantly, it's that the current international regime can neither solve the problems of space security nor space safety. We know the only legal instrument governing activity in space is the so-called Outer Space Treaty, 1967, but it's only forbidden the placing of weapons of mass destruction in orbit, but there's no restriction on the use of conventional arms to destroy the satellites, nor any restrictions on deploying the mega constellations or solve the problem of space safety. And more importantly, currently among international community, there is no agreement on what kind of restrictions and regulations should be applicable and agreed by all countries. There's only one regulations that is a proposal by China and Russia in 2008 and 2012, known as PPWT Treaty on Prevention of the Placement of Weapons in Outer Space. But this proposal failed to reach an international consensus during the negotiation session in UN. So currently we see, okay, we're going to have more mega constellations, but there's no law to regulate them. I think this is really a good time to call for multiple stakeholders, as well as space industry beneficiaries and private companies, to join the discussion together. Maybe they can provide different angles to solve this problem.
Yue, thank you so much for being on the show, and I'm taking total advantage of you being here. Let me ask you this. In our current edition of our Spacewatch Global newsletter, we have a beautiful article about women in tech and how they are finally here to stay, which is good, of course. How does this topic play out in China?
I think that in young generation, things are getting much, much better, and gender equality is improved a lot. Especially, we see a lot of young and women scientists are leading the whole country. For example, this time during the fight against coronavirus, we have the best women lead team to develop the vaccine. That is very impressive. I think with the education improved in China in the past 50 years, like, I think women's awareness for being equal and can even do better in scientific research, this awareness is getting much, much better. I feel like currently international arena, we still need to increase the presence of women to participate of specific scientific research, as well as international conference. Like, we need to have such a gender balance in the conference so as to show an attitude, like, they encourage more women to join the discussion. That is also a critical issue.
Excellent. Thank you, Yue, so much. What a great moment to almost come to the end of our show. But before we let the curtain fall, I would like to ask you, Anna, Yue, and Torsten, for your personal gems, your favorite space stories from this week. How about you, Torsten?
Yeah, I mean, what was for me most strange this week was the bankruptcy announcement of OneWeb. That struck me a lot because that was, I think, in my and in many people's opinion and hope, one of the four side companies when it comes to constellations and how to treat it in a good way. It's hard to see. I mean, I don't believe that their story will end. Hopefully not. But again, here's hope, or my companion with it.
Okay. Well, on the contrary, I have more cheerful news. So today, China's lunar rover named Jade Rabbit has already traveled over 424 meters on Moon's far side to conduct scientific exploration. This means this Jade Rabbit becomes the longest working lunar rover on the Moon right now. Because this rover represents the fruit of international space cooperation, it carries neutral radiation detector from Germany, a neutral atom detector on the rover by Sweden. It also carries payload from Netherlands and Saudi Arabia. It also marks the first major U.S.-China collaboration in space exploration since the 2011 U.S. Congressional map. So it is a great good news for all human beings, and we have more delightful news coming this year.
You win. our podcast is the best news. I think for me, the best thing was the UK Space Agency and the UK Space Trade Association coming together in a coordinated effort. I mean, maybe if it's only in writing for now, I think it just shows you that people have thought, right, we need to do something. And maybe we'll start seeing some of the applications and technologies that we saw in China at the beginning of the outbreak. Hopefully we'll see that in the UK and other parts of Europe, the States, Africa, etc. And then also the UK Space Agency and the Trade Association have come up with a survey, a COVID-19 survey, for all UK space companies to take part in. And this survey basically allows them, or it demonstrates or highlights what the space companies are going through, where their needs are, maybe where some of the stimulus package from the UK government can come into play, and what they can contribute in the real sense to COVID-19.
Wow. Thank you, Anna. I cannot believe it. We're already through with our first edition of our Spacewatch Global podcast. Anna, this may come a little unprepared for you, but can you give us a sneak peek into what's on the cooker for our next edition?
Is this my crystal ball moment?
Okay, that was not fair from my side. Let's bring in Torsten Kreening, the co-publisher of the Spacewatch.global platform.
Of course, we are will have very exciting features and news on our websites in the next 2 weeks. One thing what we will cover, we will recap the first space cafes, which will have been done by that time. So, for instance, as we mentioned earlier, we will do a quick recap with Moriba Jha about space security and debris. We will have the a space cafe with Rafael Rutkin, then recorded also about space financing in these days. So these are very, very important topics, I think, for the entire industry. But not finishing by then, we will have a number of new stories and features on the COVID-19 handling in the various countries and in the space industry and much, much more. So stay tuned and look at the website, I would say.
Absolutely, Torsten. And to all of you guys out there listening in, please find all the information about everything space-related on our website, spacewatch.global. We are a collective of space insiders, space industry experts from all over the globe, because we deeply believe that space does not belong to nations, but to everyone. So please support this show by spreading the word and our hashtag SpaceWatchGlobal. We will be back in 2 weeks, and if you're confined to staying at home these days, always remember, only the sky is the limit, so you're always safe to look upward. Thank you so much for listening in.